I mean, come on, man. Like, give me a spoiler. You're going to show the wall crashing down at the end? I mean, that's how you end this whole spot of, like, the wall crashing down and dragons. I mean, like, what?
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Ted, welcome everybody to our favorite hour of the week.
There you go. Favorite hour. Look forward to it every week. Friday nights.
Sometimes it's an hour or two. Sometimes it's a 58, you know, but hey, it's close enough to an hour. We'll round up or down as need be.
We're pretty good. We're pretty solid on the hour.
I think so. Yeah. How are you this week?
I'm good. Good. Had a cool week.
A cool week. All right. Yeah. Well, I want to hear about it and then I'll get into mine. So go for it.
All right, cool. So as we know, last week was the Oscars. I think it was very strange for the podcast because last year we were like so tuned into the Oscars. We did so much for the Oscars. And then this year with Art's interview and with all the other things that were going on, we
did zero.
We didn't talk about it at all.
I know. And the funny thing is, I'm like our show drops that Thursday. And then I'm like, oh, it's the Oscars right now. I didn't even think about it, man. It was like so far removed from my brain.
But I will say that we had we got Frank and Barbara to watch the whole Oscars. That is something they said they don't normally do. But they watched it because they were looking for Bryce.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. How'd that turn out?
So Bryce, my son, was on the Stitch Fix commercial that played before the Oscars. Luckily, we tuned in early and we saw it. And then I was touting it in my office and I was talking to a former casting director who's now a casting executive in my office, and I was showing her the still from the commercial, and we had talked about it before him booking the job and everything, and then she said, oh, I saw this in the LA Times. So it was so cool, like the casting director from like Back to the Future is sitting in an elevator with me saying, I saw your son in the LA Times. And I, you know, I told Ann to find an LA Times. She found it, she recorded it, we have a little video of that. I'll throw it on the website.
Very cool. So how did he get cast in this thing? I mean, like, how did that come about?
Well, you know, my daughter Audrey has been acting for, what is she, 12? So 12 years. She was acting since she was like 3 weeks old, I think. So
wow.
So finally he said, that's enough. I want to try to do what sister's doing. It looks like a lot of fun. So he started it this year, and he was just, you know, going around trying to book stuff. And we have, you know, the same commercial agent for them.
Wait, what do you mean he's going around trying to book stuff?
Not, you know what I mean. The agent is booking for him.
Oh, okay. Sounds like fun. Let me make some cold calls here. Oh, man. No, very cool, though. So, man, he gets a spot before the Oscars.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting because this week I was looking at the phrase break a leg. So you're familiar with break a leg. I think everybody knows it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's an old acting thing.
Sure.
And we aren't. And so break a leg means, it actually comes from the old vaudeville days. And when you were on stage, sometimes they'd hire.
You got to say it like vaudeville.
Vaudeville. They would hire a lot of people, and if you're on stage and you're in the wings of the stage, you know, you're off stage basically, and if you weren't seen by the audience, then you wouldn't get paid. So the idea of break a leg meant that you would get at least your leg into the picture, into the, you know, the frame of the stage, so that the audience could see you. And that would mean that you broke your leg into the view of the audience, and then that means you could get paid. So, you know, whenever the kids go out for auditions, we're always like, break a leg, break a leg. And literally, you know, they overshot, you know, they shot a lot of stuff. Sometimes you shoot 10 kids or something and you don't know which one you're going to use. And Bryce actually got his quick little shot. It's only like a few seconds in the commercial, but even just those few seconds meant that he broke onto the screen. So it actually, it calls back to that idea of overshooting. You know, you get paid for the day of shooting.
Oh.
But you don't get paid for the residuals unless you actually get put on the actual commercial.
Oh, I always thought break a leg was like kind of, if you wish somebody good luck, that's bad luck. So you wish them bad luck for good luck. Like,
I know.
I'm not going to wish you good luck, so I'm going to wish you bad luck. So go break a leg.
So like superstitious to do the reverse. Yeah, but this is.
Exactly.
And this is what, you know, I don't know. How
that's not what it is?
Can you believe LinkedIn? I don't know. Somebody just posted on LinkedIn, so.
I don't know.
I believed it.
Yeah. No, it sounds plausible, I suppose.
Sounded good to me.
Yeah. Well, I don't have anything to compare.
Do you want to do beer? Do you want to do beers and then we go into your week?
Sure. Let's go for it.
All right.
All right. Well, since you're like rocking and rolling, just roll into your beer and go for it.
Okay. All right. So I was hitting up some IPA sellers online on Twitter. So I don't know if they got my tweet, but I'm trying to get us, you know, some free beers.
Hey, I'm all about free beer.
On Twitter. And I'm like, hey, you guys do like a crazy round the world IPA thing. But I will say that my beer came by way of Terry and Matt Gainey this week. So thank you to you guys, the Gaineys, for this Golden Road Ride On IPA.
Who are the Gaineys?
They're family friends.
Oh, okay.
And listeners. So
sweet.
They said, oh, you drink beers. So here's a fun Golden Road.
Golden Road Ride On IPA, yeah. With the woman with her surf, a young lass with her surfboard.
All right. So let's do this IPA right here.
There you go.
And I have the Stella, my Christmas present from Jimmy here.
Yeah. Stella. Well, while you're doing that, we'll let the head do its thing and then you could taste it and give us some notes. Cool. But I have the brewery spelled B-R-U-E-R-Y.
Mm-hmm.
And the beer is called Mischief. Unfiltered bottle condition, Belgian style ale, golden and hoppy. It's out of Placentia, California. So I'm just wondering, are they giving birth to beer? All right, so it's 8.5% out of Orange County, California, or Placentia, that is. Yeah, but, you know, I was in the store and I saw this, you know, at the you go to Handy Market, I go to the Village Market.
There you go.
All right, let's see what we got here.
Oh, my God, that's huge. It's a wine glass. It's a wine bottle.
Yeah, it's a big bottle. So I also have a glass for Clarissa here, too. So I'm going to share some of this one because this thing looks like, oh, wow, it's a lot lighter than I expected, like, much darker. All right. Here you go, Clarissa. I'm going to pour yours, too, just so you get some. Here you go. But I'm going to hoard a little bit for myself just for the finish.
For later.
Yeah, I'm not going to give her the whole thing, though. She'll be smashed. She drinks this whole thing anyway. Cheers. Salute.
Cheers.
Okay. Oh, I got a lot of head here, but. Ah. Oh, wow. It's amazing. Mm. Okay. So give me some tasting notes, and then I'll get into mine.
All right. So I like this Ride On IPA. It definitely has the Citra hops, but I like the fact that it's not like overly straight on lemon. You know, it's got more of a full fruit flavor. So it's a fun beer. It's a great IPA, and it's a 6.5.
There you go. Yeah, this is, hold on, one more sip. Yeah, a lot more orange than I anticipated. Like orange peel almost. I mean, it's very good, very fruity, finishes clean, hits you probably hardest on the initial sip, and then like it tapers off as it goes towards the back. Yeah, I don't know. There's not much else to say about it, I guess.
Cool.
But very smooth, very smooth. All right, Ted. So this week we had a new review. What do you say we read it?
All right, cool.
Yeah, I have it up here if you
want.
Go
for it.
All right. So looks like it's in iTunes by WI Appraiser, which was January 29th. So just about, I don't know, a month ago, looks like.
Yeah.
Excellent hosts and excellent discussions! The conversations had by Jim and Ted are truly fascinating. As someone who loves TV and film, listening to this podcast was extremely interesting and caused me to think deeper about the trailers and previews behind upcoming films. 5 stars is not enough!
Oh, I wish he could give us more stars. That'd be awesome.
Oh, man, I know, I know. But hey, thank you, WI Appraiser. Wisconsin? appraising the entire state of Wisconsin.
Or just the letter.
Maybe.
Just the letters.
That must be a lot of milk and cheese. Yeah. All right. No, that's cool. That's cool. So we appreciate it. Hey, and again, like we've said in the past, you want to get right on our podcast? Hey, leave us a review. We'll definitely read you. So
how was your week, Jimmy?
Yeah. So my week, not clearly defined as your week, with just the Oscars commercial and, you know, my kid like being on TV, but we have bunny rabbits in the yard.
You have bunny rabbits?
So
what does that mean?
Well, we have a family of rabbits underneath the deck.
Oh, cool.
So the past few mornings I'm sitting there, you know, you let the dog out, you know, we have half lab, half standard poodle. So Labradoodle, he's about 80 pounds or so, you know, and he sits there like extremely patient at the back door, just staring out, like just, you know, as calm, like he's like ice, right? He's just sitting there. You open the door to let him out and you don't realize he's just been waiting for that door to open. I mean, he takes off like lightning to chase these rabbits.
Jake is fast.
And the rabbits go back underneath the deck, you know. And so Clarissa got a photo of the rabbit sitting on the back patio. Big ass rabbit, too. So we have these rabbits in the backyard. And then, of course, I'm like, oh, wow, we got rabbits in the backyard. How cute. And Clarissa says, what's going to happen when they die? You think it's going to smell? I'm like, I didn't even go there, but okay. Yeah. So anyway, that's our week. We got rabbits in the backyard. Otherwise, I mean, that means slow week in the Vancouver household.
But if Jake catches them, they'll die a horrible death outside of the...
Yeah, porch. No, I don't. He's not going to catch him, man. He's fast, but they're way faster.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Ted, HBO coming soon? What's going on here?
So, you want to get into the first tier, the supercut? I call it a supercut, but I think.
Well, I was going to say, you start, I'll follow. I don't even know where to go with this thing.
Okay. So, this week we have as our first, I guess it's not really a trailer.
No, it's like a HBO 2-minute advertisement of, yeah, like I think you said it best, like supercut of all the shows they have coming out for the upcoming year.
Yeah, it's a hype video for like everything that's coming up this year. And I think it was funny the way we talked about Barry last week, because this is season 2 of Barry, you know, you couldn't get into it. And there's very few things that I'm watching on HBO that's coming out this summer. So it was very hard for me to get into this, but there's so many, it would just hit you with the rapidity of these different, you know, different titles. And I had trouble deciding where one stopped and where one started and where the actors, what titles they're connected to. So I think my big, you know, sometimes we give executive notes. I think my executive note is that it's run together a little too much, especially with the new titles. For the returning stuff, I guess you're going to talk about, we're going to talk about the idea of we're not trying to encourage new viewership. We'll just hope to crystallize and bring, re-excite the people that have been gone. How long has Game of Thrones been off the air? It's like 2 years, right?
Oh, yeah. It's driving me crazy. 2 years. And then let me just jump in really quick.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. Like, give me a spoiler alert. You're going to show the wall crashing down at the end? I mean, that's how you end this whole spot of like the wall crashing down and dragons. I mean, like, what?
Is that a thing? Is that something they didn't want to do?
Well, Ted. I mean, the whole point is the wall is what's been guarded for like a millennia to keep like the undead on the other side. And they show it collapsing. I mean, it's like, I don't know how to show the end. How about we just show the Twin Towers collapsing? You know, like it's like it's like that impactful.
But what if that collapsing of that wall or that mountain
happens in the first 5 minutes? I thought the same thing.
Yeah. Then it's not a spoiler, right?
Right. I thought the same thing. Like, what if you tune in, they do the recap, and then all of a sudden, oh, the wall collapses. It's like, well, what the hell just happened? I can only hope that's the case, because if that's like the final, like the last major event before the final battle or something, like, wow, man, he just like this. I mean, I don't know in context where that lands, but jeepers.
Right. I don't think HBO would let something like that. I don't think the creators of Game of Thrones would allow for a major final season, end of season spoiler to be put into something like this, you know, be put into any promotion.
Yeah. Yeah. I see what you're saying. And I think I have to agree with that, because like that might be the teaser. Like they want my reaction, right?
Right.
You know, to be like, what? Oh my God, I got to tune in, you know? And then it's like, oh, well, that's in the first 5 minutes. And then there's like a whole season to go after that, you know?
Yeah. Right. Cause now that the wall's down, they're not protected anymore. So that's an interesting season for me.
Yeah. And then, Silicon Valley. Doesn't look like it's coming back, huh?
It's on there.
Oh, it must've gone so fast. I didn't even see it.
It went by extremely fast. Again, you know, like it flashes up on the screen, you know, and the shows that are coming back like that, all they have to do is just tell you they're coming back and hopefully you'll tune in, or you'll want to try to tune in.
And I mean, if that's the kind of show, if you're a fan, you're a fan. If you're not, you're not. You know, I don't think it's good. Like, what is it? 4 seasons now, 5 seasons, something like that. I don't think it's going to grab any new viewers at this point who's not already invested.
To me, those are the death seasons for me. I can't. I don't know. My attention span is no longer as long as it was. I can't stay with shows that long.
You're saying like 5th season or something.
By the 4th season, I'm usually like petering out, and with all the things that you can watch, it's like I don't even know what's left to be said sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, and that's where I got with The Walking Dead and all that stuff. It's like, I mean, I must have stuck with that show for like 9 seasons or something, you know?
Yeah.
And it got to the point, like, I think it was like 3 episodes left in like 2 seasons ago, you know, or whatever it was, you know. And
yeah.
And it just got to the point where like, I'm done. I don't even care how it ends. I'm done. It was like they're doing whatever they're doing with Negan and all this stuff. And it just got to the point where like, I'm done. I don't even care how it ends. Like, all I know is they're going to win. Negan's going to lose. And then somehow like there's going to be a new story, or they're going to collapse the show. But the reality is it doesn't matter, because I've stuck around way too long.
Yeah, same here. And I tapped out a couple seasons before you did, so.
Yeah, and the problem, I think, you know, maybe these are some executive notes on something like this too, but I mean, I think the problem that I have with it is, as someone who's watched Silicon Valley, you know, season after season, you know, I'm looking for the shows that I watch, you know, Game of Thrones for sure.
Right.
Silicon Valley, and, well, they had Veep on there.
Veep's another one. I love that show intensely, but I'm not drawn in to see it again.
Yeah, you know. And then there was like Vice Principals, which that just was bizarre from the start. But you know, you watch it and you see the I don't know, not character creation or formation of how they evolve, but you know, you're watching this thing and it's just ticking by so fast. You're just trying to keep up with like what's new, what's old. Oh, and they also had Westworld.
No, Deadwood.
They had a cup. No, but they also had Westworld though. The one dude.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, there was a Westworld one in there too. And I was like, wait, is that Westworld? It doesn't look like Westworld. Oh, I can't even like digest it. It went by so quick. And I think it was just too many scenes too fast. And it was like, if all you want me to do is watch, then just tell me it's coming back. You don't have to go through 100 miles an hour so I miss something.
Yeah.
You know, that was my biggest complaint about how quickly that went through. I mean, otherwise, HBO, as usual, has a lot of good stuff. It's a great premium network. And I'm looking forward to Game of Thrones.
And I think we had talked about this previously, where the DirecTV overlords, or the Time Warner overlords that bought HBO. I don't know who exactly owns who, but they're asking for a lot more content. And to me, this is another thing that kind of shows you the idea that they have a lot more content, and they brought in some new executives that was from Showtime, but he also was at NBC. So he's like, he has more of the cachet of a larger scaled channel.
Let me run this by you, get an idea. So we both agree and we both see like season four, season five is like the death knell of a TV show, you know, a series.
Yeah.
We get tired of it, you know, essentially. But Breaking Bad, we stuck through to the end. That held our interest.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming it held your interest.
It held my interest, but continue. I checked into that show halfway through and then I caught up really quickly and then I followed it for the last 3 years.
Okay, we did about the same. So maybe that's the difference.
So that could be part of the magic of it, you know?
Okay, and then the other half of that magic, let's say, that I'm thinking is, so maybe Game of Thrones disappearing for a couple of years is the brilliance in like the marketing side of it recognizes that you have this lull in a series and they probably have data on who watches, you know, streaming and what do you call it? Like subscription, I guess.
The a la carte, the HBO Go versus HBO Now. Yeah.
Well, and even the subscription through your cable network and all that stuff, exactly. Right? So they have all this data. And the thing to think about it is maybe it's like they see those like mid-season doldrums that kind of happen. And they're like, you know what? Let's put the brakes on this thing. We're going to really build the audience and we're going to get the anticipation to the point where, you know, 2 year hiatus and all of a sudden, like they're all gonna be coming back. So maybe that's just it, like just what you said, like rather than getting people dropping off, the people who already dropped off and everything are gonna be like, no, now I gotta see it, it's been 2 years,
right? And I think it might have something to do with the onslaught of the way Netflix is just producing so much content that every month they have 40 to 50 pieces of content that are coming out. So I like the idea of what you're saying, you know, 2 year break or some kind of break. They're like stockpiling their shows. They're like, we know we need to produce more, but right now we can't produce more. So we're going to turn off the spigot for a year and we'll have a trickle of like some shows while we're producing the same amount of shows. And then the summer of 2019, we're really going to get the metrics out and we're going to measure everything really, really tightly. And we're going to have like 40 shows come out over, you know, April, March, April, May, you know, and we'll see how it stacks up against the behemoth of content that is constantly flooding out of Netflix.
That is a wonderful transition I think you just gave us. So thanks for the softball.
You're welcome.
Yeah, The Irishman.
The Irishman. So this is an announcement and it was also called, it's called an announcement by Netflix, but it was called a teaser trailer for the Oscars and it played during the Oscars and I thought it was a very fun piece to play in the Oscars given all the hype around Roma and how Roma was this black and white foreign language film that was up for tons of Oscars, you know, and it had a huge, massive campaign, FYC, For Your Consideration campaign behind it, trying to get it nominations for Oscars and all the awards. And it, you know, it did its job. It got a lot of awards. It didn't win the big one, but it got what the director, but you know, best director. So I think this is like immediately like, I joked on it. I said the For Your Consideration Oscars 2020 campaign started on the Oscars, on the day of the Oscars from this year for next year for The Irishman. Because if you put all these people together, Martin Scorsese, you know, De Niro, who else is there? Pacino.
Yeah, I mean, it's like all Harvey Keitel.
Harvey Keitel, yeah, amazing.
You know, it looks incredible. Joe Pesci.
What looks incredible about it? It looks incredible, but it's a list of names. That's all it is. It's so powerful. It's a list of names and then these few lines that the lines don't say anything, but because of the people that are saying them, you can read so much into it that it's just so, yeah, it's amazing.
That's why it looks incredible. So, but the one question I had, like, when are these, I mean, don't get me wrong, it looks incredible because of the legacy. Like, every time an actor's name is thrown on the screen, you're thinking of all the movies they've been in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
It truly is like, okay, you're looking at the actors, but it truly is a legacy sell.
Hardcore legacy sell, and that's all this is. It's called an announcement, but yeah.
Yeah, they're not saying this is what it's about. They're not giving you any information. They're just saying these guys have been in amazing movies. Now they're all together in this movie. Look at how amazing this movie is going to be. But here's the question I have, though. Like, okay, Scorsese, he's a director.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any difference.
Oh, it does. Huge.
But when you look... No. But let me finish my statement first.
Oh, sorry.
But when you look at the near... Like, okay, in other words, behind this, the camera in front of the camera is kind of what I'm getting at, right? So I don't think Scorsese being behind the camera is as much of an impact as all the other guys in front of the camera. So in other words, like, when are they going to be too old? And I guess we need to see the movie to know whether or not they're too old.
Yeah.
To say it another way is, when you look at Harrison Ford in, like, action, adventure, like, you know, I mean... Is he too old sometimes to be running around with, like, whips and pistols and punching people in the face?
Yeah.
You know, as like an 85-year-old guy, you know what I mean?
I think, and it's so funny because it's like, forget whips and pistols. He has a blaster, you know, and yeah.
Or whatever, you know what I mean.
Han Solo. So
yeah,
I agree. I think it matters immensely that this is Martin Scorsese, you know? I think that sets the whole tone of the lines that we're going to hear. It makes everything, I think it just heightens everything.
Yeah. Oh no, Scorsese's like amazing. But that's why he said in front of the camera and behind the camera, right? I mean, he can direct, I mean, like, young people or old people. I think that doesn't really matter. But when you look in front of the camera and you see the actors and they're all geriatric, I mean, like, I loved all those guys as actors because of all the movies that I grew up with them, you know? But is it going to be like... mid-40s and older crowd who's going to go to the show and who's going to be sitting in front of the TV watching it? Or, I mean, are you going to capture that younger audience?
I think the younger audience is hungry for what we had as, you know, as young adults. So I think the younger audience is savvy to the idea of the director of Wolf of Wall Street, you know what I mean?
So the old is still new.
I think the old is still new, especially when you start off behind the camera with Martin Scorsese. I think that's key. I think it's again part of the power of what Netflix has going for it. They're all about repackaging stuff that makes sense. You know, it just makes sense to put these things together. And it's almost like a wish list. If they could license Goodfellas, then they would. But since they Goodfellas already been produced, Casino's already been produced, why don't they just hire the actors? They're still alive. The director still wants to make movies. You know, you throw him creative control and the freedom to make a movie that he wants to make, and then you own it outright and you don't have to worry about the licensing. It's a Netflix movie, you know?
So are you where I'm at and you think this is going to be like a gangster movie?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it has to be.
I did a little, I was digging around because I was excited about it. And Al Pacino plays Jimmy Hoffa. So it's all about Hoffa's involvement with the mob.
Oh, okay.
And I thought it was funny too, because as I always look for the official versions to put on our website, I've got the Netflix version, and the Netflix version has just the title card up as the thumbnail.
Yeah.
But if you go around the internet, you can see other YouTube, you know, some other trailer aggregators pulled it in, and they use a still from a production still from wherever they could have grabbed it of De Niro, you know, like standing with a gun kind of menacingly. So I think it's interesting that they use a still of, you know, the movie or whatever they've kind of cobbled together from the movie to draw you in, when the actual video behind it has no human being in it whatsoever visually.
So here's my question though. All right, Netflix and it goes to the theater. You know, you're already paying $11 a month for Netflix, let's say streaming. I mean, you take your family, assuming your kids are old enough, you know, to go see something like this. So say four people. I mean, you're talking probably what, $50 for tickets? You know, maybe dinner beforehand, travel to and from the time, you know,
$100.
What I'm getting at that is you're looking at like well over $100 to go see this in the theater for a family of four, you know, with dinner and all that stuff, popcorn, whatever it is. Or you're already paying $11 for Netflix. So, you know, I don't know. What do you watch? Like 10 things, say 11 things a month. So it's like $100+ versus like $1.
Yeah.
You know, if you really break it down, right? So, I mean, who's the audience to go see this in the theater? Do you think people will? Or, I mean, is the big screen that much of a draw?
I think it's that's the Academy play, right? I think the window.
Well, okay. Yeah.
The window for theatrical stuff for Netflix is short. It's 2 to 3 weeks. That's not enough money for the theater owners to make their profits. You know, they need a movie to run a good 2 to 3 months for them to get the full juice out of it. So this is strictly a play for consideration in the Oscars and other award ceremonies.
So they're banking on just people on Netflix audience at home watching this. They're not really banking on the theater draw, the box office.
Yeah, they'll do like you said, they'll do like a 7-city limited release or maybe a little bit wider for something like this and then see where it goes. And I think it is just that. It's only for consideration.
It's for awards and all that stuff.
Award consideration, yep.
Yeah, okay. Because, I mean, you know, the best way that I can describe it is you first watch it at home on Netflix, you know, streaming, and you're like, that movie was so amazing. Like, I can only imagine how good this is going to be in the theater. Let's go to the theater next week. Like, maybe you watch it first at home and then you go to the theater instead of the other way around.
You test it out. You see if it's worth your time to go see on the big screen.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you're watching some crazy sci-fi Star Wars. I don't know, but and then you're just like, wow, that was like really cool. Let's go watch this on the big screen instead of the other way around. And then you wind up just walking out of the movie or something.
You're still hung up on that. I don't think I've walked out on anything for that, you know?
I've never walked out either. That was Marcos from a while back who was saying everybody walks out or he walks out.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. Do you want to see? I think those sci-fi movies, you know, you're going to have something that you want to be in the theater to see, something that's going to, you're going to want it to envelop you. So I don't know. I don't think this, I would rather see Goodfellas in the theater than see this. I'd rather see The Departed in the theaters than see this in the theaters, I think.
Yeah, but you don't know what this is yet though.
Yeah, but like you said, they're older. What are they going to, you know, can they match the quality? I mean, even though it's all the same people, are they doing something fresh? Are they doing something new? I guess we'll have to see, but
yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah.
I'm excited to see another story from these creators. It's really like Mile 22 is a great example. Mile 22 has all these elements in it. That's exactly like The Kingdom. So I loved the movie. I loved it, you know, almost as much as I liked The Kingdom. So it was interesting to see it again. But it was derivative of something that all the original people are in, or the creator is the same creator. So I guess you can't be derivative of yourself, but it is a greatest hits kind of thing, play.
Yeah, and I mean, what's De Niro gonna play? Travis Bickle?
You talking to me? You talking to me? You talking to me? Then who the hell else are you talking? You talking to me? Well, I'm the only one here.
The whole point is, you're right. I mean, they've played these characters over and over. And yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But I mean, I'm looking forward to it overall. I mean, I'm definitely going to watch it because I love all these actors. And, you know, I mean, going back through all of their movies that they've been in and all the various directors that have directed the movies that they've been in. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a win-win for everybody.
And I think it's so crazy, too. You know, we said, all right, so visually, there's very little going on. There's a bullet shell flying through the air, making the eyes of all the letters and the names. There's the names of the actors and the director. And then there's just very light dialogue that is completely pedestrian. But because of the mouths that you hear it coming from, because of the voices you know, when he says, "I hear you paint houses," you get a chill because, you know, you're like, you paint houses with the blood of the mark that you take out. You know what I mean? It's like...
Yeah. Like it's a double entendre.
But there's nothing in it that would lead you to believe it other than the context of what you bring as a fan of these people, these actors, you know?
Do you want to play rough? Okay. Uno. Say hello to my little friend. Do you want to play rough? Okay.
So all these old guys, man, let's talk about the kid.
All right, cool.
Let's go young. So Billy the Kid, what are your thoughts?
So I put this in here. I'm still not a fan, even though the Ballad of Buster Scruggs was much better than I thought it was going to be.
Wait, did you watch all the different shorts?
Yeah. I watched it. I even fell asleep and then I rewatched the ones that I slept through. So
Okay.
So I did it. I liked
it. So you did like the Ballad of Buster Scruggs?
Yeah. I liked it more than I thought I would, for sure.
Wow, you're not a Western guy.
I know. So that's why it's strange that I put this in here too. But the thing that caught me and the thing that the legacy card that really piqued my interest was Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
So he's one of my favorite actors, great in Law and Order, Criminal Intent for many years. And then he plays Kingpin on Daredevil. So in that now defunct Marvel, all the Netflix Marvel shows are all gone. But
yeah, we watched Daredevil for a while.
But he was a great, intense Daredevil.
Well, and it's funny too, because like last week you mentioned that you got to do the give and take with me. So like you put in the movies you like, and then you put in movies you think I'll like and all this stuff. And I'm watching this. I'm like, Ted doesn't like Westerns. But he knows I like Westerns, so apparently, like, The Irishman is for him, and The Kid is for me. But here he puts it in for him. Man, he threw me for a curveball there.
No, I thought we'd both find things that we like in this. And then, what was the line? The line is what got me. Ethan Hawke's.
I don't know which line that is.
It matters the story they tell when you're gone.
Oh.
So, to me, that's just such a powerful line of both, you know, the idea of legacy, the idea of what, you know, what humanity is. Like, people think about their life now. Our lives are so much longer than they used to be. You know, everybody lives, you know, around 80 to 100 years now is a common length of life, lifespan.
Yeah.
But back in these days, what did people live? Like 30 years? You know, if they lived to 40?
Yeah, 30, 40 maybe. I don't know.
If they live 40, then they're super old. But it's just the idea of it only matters the story they tell when you're gone. And it's just that was truer then than it is now. But it's still true to this day. You know what I mean? There is still an idea of legacy that you can carry with you, but you don't have to carry it. You know, you have, I think it had a depth to it that really leads to the idea of filmmaking, storytelling. You know, it's all of the things that encompass the art of filmmaking.
I think it goes along well with this too, because it's only the story they tell when you're gone. And it's like, as Billy the Kid, he's let's just say character in history.
He's like a myth. He's a
Yeah, maybe that's a good way to put it. He's like a myth. And the story they tell maybe grows the longer he's been gone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Definitely.
The other thing, too, I'm noticing like a growing trailer trope, like maybe a new era of trailer tropes that are embarking on us. Have you picked up on it or no?
Tell me.
Well, you wind up with these fast edits like in this trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So they go through a series of fast edits, and the fast edits always have like a percussion type banging.
Oh yes.
That you know, it might be a punch in the face. It might be a slamming of the door or the shooting of a shotgun.
The bell.
You know, but it's like the edits happen so quickly and every edit has like this percussion sound that embodies it or that accompanies it. So, and that's something I've noticed over like a number of the trailers that we've been covering lately are these like super quick bam, 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 bam edits with the bam, 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 like sounds, you know,
right.
That like give a transition sound in a sense between the edits.
And I think so. Last week we were talking about the way that the Highwaymen, it had appropriate music, but the music just kind of played well with the edit and the action of the film that it was portraying. But for me, the music in The Kid heightened it. You know, it really was there. It was put in the front of your mind. It was definitely driving the whole action of what the plot of the trailer. And like you said, there's, you know, on top of the rhythm of the songs that we're playing, it has slamming, gun cocking, bells ringing to kind of play into the rhythm of the edit and the rhythm of the action and the rhythm of the sounds. And it just, everything played really, really well together.
Do you notice though, or I mean, is the music, does it take you out of the era or does it keep you in the era? Because the music is very modern.
And I think that's the idea. Like it is modern, but it's still within the vein.
Like I think if you look at, say, A Knight's Tale, right?
Mm-hmm.
With Heath Ledger, you know, going back a number of years, but that was like modern music in like a medieval time, but that was more in, well, maybe not a comedic sense, but that was more in like that brought you out of it to say we're not taking ourselves too serious. But this is like different, where it's modern, but it's trying to maintain a sense of seriousness.
Yes, it's like paying homage to the time frame, but letting you know that we're in modern times as far as the trailer that we're making and the song that we're putting together, we're composing for it.
Yeah,
I definitely think that it is much more respectful of the period piece. So this is definitely a period piece. And I think when you talk about A Knight's Tale and you talk about Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet, they are kind of not your full period pieces. They're faux period pieces. You know, they're winks and nods in the performances and in the music and in the composition that show you that it's not a true historically accurate. Like they wouldn't care about the flower bags like that you and Ed are finding to put on the shelves in those.
Exactly. I mean, somewhat like, you know, Robin Hood Men in Tights. Right? Did you get the feeling that Dane DeHaan, the guy playing the kid, looks a lot like Leonardo DiCaprio in this?
Yeah, I felt like they were definitely pushing him. And I don't know, it's hard. The rest of the cast is so, and they're so well established that it's, you know, he's got to play.
Oh, yeah. Ethan Hawke and, yeah.
Yeah, Ethan Hawke, Chris Pratt, you know, they're playing just grittier versions of themselves. And it's
big beards.
Yeah. So it's hard. It's hard to match up to that. So we'll see when it comes out, or you'll see when it comes out.
Right. Because you don't go to Westerns. Yeah. And I like Westerns, you know. I like Westerns because, you know, my growing up and stuff, my grandfather was always into Westerns, but he was into Westerns like, you know, the 1950s Westerns where the good guy always, you know, he wore white, you know, and the bad guy wore black and they never lost their hats and, you know, the corny Westerns of the day that they were. But
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, but Westerns have always, like, I think the thing about a Western is they're very linear story for the most part. I don't think you can deviate too much from a Western,
mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, because if you do, then all of a sudden, like, sure, you could deviate, but what are you going to deviate to? Like the Western is like a bunch of robots. I mean, who would ever write something like that, you know? I mean, the even with that though, I mean, like the Western trope is that it's like you got the Western and you have the saloon and you have like the call girl hookers and you have
the sci-fi of the
yeah. But I'm just saying though, and then you have like the gold miner dude, and I mean, it's just they're just so linear in their stories, you know. I mean, but I don't know. Maybe that's what's so endearing about them,
right?
So, but and then you know, one thing too. I mean, as far as the kid, I didn't have anything more. Did you?
No, I'm good.
So you shared with me this Star Wars edit of Star Wars Always.
Yes.
It was like 5 minutes of like all this Star Wars stuff.
Topher Grace, for the actor from the 70s show, this is one of his favorite things to do. He edited down the prequel trilogy down to the length of one movie, took out all the political stuff and just put in all the cool stuff. And now he's done this little...
Did he get rid of Jar Jar Binks?
I think he got rid of Jar Jar Binks.
Yes.
And he got rid of all the Senate stuff, like all the talk about the trade wars and stuff like that.
Oh, I'm going to watch it. Did you watch Mr. Plinkett's review of Phantom Menace, though?
No.
Oh, my God. I shared it with you. You didn't watch it?
Did you send it to me?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's not safe for work.
Oh, that's why. Because I was clicking on it at work, and then it said, you said not safe for work. So I shelved it.
Oh, yeah. He's dropping F-bombs and showing dildos and... And I'm just like, I can just imagine like Ted's has this on at work and like, you know, some female executive walks in and there's like a dildo on the screen. Yeah. But dude, I'm serious, man. It's like, it was made when YouTube, you know, remember you couldn't do more than like 8 minute like segments.
Uh-huh.
So it was done around that, you know, what was that like 2006 of YouTube, 2007. So it's a bit old at this point. So it's like 7 parts, which it's roughly 70 minutes. But oh my God, is it well worth it? It is one of the best, like, you know what I, so I watched it again. I've seen it a few times. I watched it again recently. And what it really is, it's film school 101.
Uh-huh.
Now, keep in mind, I've only had a couple of film classes in college. I don't know what film school is like, but it's film school 101 where they lay out like plot, character, directing, story. They lay out everything. And he more or less compares the original Star Wars and the brilliance of the original Star Wars to the Phantom Menace. And well, I'll keep all my opinions to myself so I don't poison the well. But the metaphors, like all the stuff that comes out of it and just the character development. I mean, it's film school 101 that I think you'll get into because you went to film school. And it's really like, you know, and he uses a good movie and a bad movie to educate you on like how to create a film.
Awesome.
Oh, it's amazing. It is one of the best reviews. But like I said, though, not safe for work. He's a little vulgar and crass and a bit weird at times. I won't spoil anything because you're going to watch it and you're going to be like, what the hell? Like, what is this? it gets a bit funky in
okay.
parts, but that's what makes it so brilliant, you know?
Cool. I'll watch it for next week then.
Yeah. So
since we're talking about what we'll watch for next week, how about we talk about what we watch this week?
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, go ahead.
All right. Well,
yeah.
Today at work, we had a lunchtime screening of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Okay.
So that was fun to watch again, kind of in the theatrical setting with all my coworkers.
Now, do you guys have like at your work, do you guys have like a studio theater kind of a thing that you can screen stuff on?
Yeah, we have a screening room. It's got like 75 seats in it, I guess.
Oh, wow. That big.
So it's a decent sized screening room. Yeah,
that is. And how big is the screen? Like a couple hundred inches or like or maybe you go by feet at that point.
I don't even know. It's pretty big. It was definitely nice to see it on that, the, you know, in the dark with friends, you know, so
good sound.
Half the people in the audience hadn't seen it before. So that's always fun.
And that's the animated one, right?
That's the animated one.
Yeah.
So I saw that today at noon and then I came home and during dinner and after dinner, we saw Spider-Man Homecoming. thing. So,
oh, okay.
That's where we are in the Marvel Cinematic Universe challenge.
And aren't there like seven New Yorks or something in Spider-Verse or something like that?
Yeah, there's a lot of different spider. There's many, many universes. The multiverse.
So cool. So you've been like a spider. So you feel like you could climb the walls at this
Definitely.
Point.
I could nice. Stick to the ceiling.
So I think I figured out why I'm not a fan of Marvel.
What movie are you on, by the way, in your challenge?
Well, we just finished Avengers.
Okay, the first one.
The first Avengers, yeah. So we watched Captain America, the two, what is it called? The two...
Iron Mans?
Iron Mans. Well, we have the Hulk this week because the Hulk took forever to get here.
Oh, and you finally got the Hulk.
Finally got the Hulk. Yeah, we're going to watch that tomorrow night. And then, you know, but anyway, so we watched all the originals at this point, minus, oh, Thor. We watched Thor.
Couple of Thors, right?
One Thor.
Oh, one Thor. Okay.
So all of them to this point, I've already seen them before I saw them again.
Okay.
So I didn't realize I saw them all. And then you're watching them and you're like, oh, we already saw all these. But what I can say with certainty is after the Avengers, I didn't see any more.
Okay.
So that battle in New York, when those dudes were coming out of the hole in the sky.
Yes.
And all that stuff. That was so over the top ridiculous. It burned me for the rest of the series. And that's, I think, why I haven't watched any more. Cause I was like into it for the beginning.
And then it's so funny that you say that, because it's like they took it to that height, they took it to that level. And then after that, they're like, well, we just can't keep topping ourselves. That's no fun. You know what I mean? We've already done the Battle of New York. You know, we can't just keep doing this. And they actually go interesting places with the villains, and the villains kind of scale down to like a personal villain. Iron Man 3 you haven't seen, right?
No, that's...
That's got to be soon.
That's like the next one or two to come. Yeah, I'm not sure which, but it's coming quick. It's coming soon, I should say.
So Iron Man 3 is one of my favorite of the Iron Mans, because it's written and directed by Shane Black. Big fan of Shane Black, Lethal Weapon writer. So it has this tongue-in-cheek, very Robert Downey Jr. forward kind of movie. So I think Kevin Feige again goes into finding the right directors to make the right pieces play well together. So
yeah, and both me and Clarissa, I mean, I think we agree that Robert Downey Jr. is by far the superior actor of the crew. I mean, he's just like so far above everybody with regard to just, I don't know, just his acting prowess, that, you know, he just, like, when he's on screen, I mean, he really steals the show, I think.
And it's so funny, because when you hear the behind the scenes from all the other actors, I think it was Chris Evans, that when they did that first Avengers, he said, like, when Robert Downey Jr. is going, you better know your lines, you better know the plot points that you have to hit, because you don't know where he's going to take it, and you just have to be ready to just go wherever he goes. And if he goes off script, and if he's ad-libbing here or there,
and you can tell he does that, yeah. That's what makes him such a great actor,
and it's going to be great, and the things that he's going to come up with, you know, he's just kind of going in the moment and being Tony Stark, and you just kind of have to go with him and go with where he's going and just trust yourself as an actor. And it was like, to hear Chris Evans like say this is amazing, because Chris Evans is a great actor in his own right, but like he's kind of, you know, he has to be even more sure of himself when he's around the, you know, Robert Downey Jr., Tony Stark, you know.
Well, and it's so funny because you can completely see like how that plays out with, you know, Robert Downey Jr. playing Tony Stark, and how Robert Downey Jr. like, you can kind of tell when he goes off script, when he has like that flare of arrogance and so on, and he's doing his thing, and you're like, dude, how does he pull this off? Like, he's just so like natural, you know? Like, is he this arrogant in real life? Because it's like, it's just so ridiculous, you know? Yeah, but no, he's definitely, I mean, I do enjoy his acting for sure. But yeah, that battle in New York, I think, just put it over the top for me at the time.
And turned you off to the whole franchise.
The whole franchise.
Crazy.
You know, it was just so ridiculous. So, but But whatever, we'll get through it and we'll keep going and we'll see how it is. But yeah, I just didn't like it, uh-huh. you know? It just didn't do it for me because it was like just too ridiculous.
Okay.
You know, these monsters flying around and it's just like, really, what? Where's this even coming from? You know, and then the Hulk doing his thing. I mean, it was just nuts. But whatever, you know, we'll get through it.
You got through that one. Now we're on to the Hulk. You're going back in time to the Hulk, right?
Well, the Hulk, exactly. Yeah, the Hulk would have been, you know,
the second movie.
Yeah, like 4 or 5 movies ago or something. Maybe 4 movies ago. And then I think after that it's Iron Man 3, I think, is the next one to come.
Cool.
So, yeah, but whatever. You know, we'll get through them. We'll watch them all and I'm going to stick with it. And then I think what I'm going to do after these is get into the Marvel, like, I don't even know, what is it even called? Like, it's not the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Which one?
Is it?
What is?
Like, Captain Marvel and all that. What are those?
Oh, that's still part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, but they're not a part of the lineage, though.
Yeah, Captain Marvel, the one that's coming out next week?
Yeah, but is that, like, when you go to the wiki page, it's not on there.
Which one are you talking? It's because it's coming out next week.
Oh, maybe it's not put on the page because it has been released.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, maybe that's it. Yeah, because they have, like...
It'll all make sense when you get to Infinity War.
So next year?
Yeah, exactly.
At the rate we're going. Yeah. No, that and then, I mean, that's pretty much, we haven't watched much. You know, it's been, Clarissa has been getting home late from work and stuff, and we haven't been able to watch much. But yeah, like I said, tomorrow's the Hulk, so we're going a little bit back in time. Then we're going to get back forward, and we'll be back on track.
Sweet.
Yeah, so just a little bit more Man in the High Castle, you know, and getting through to that. Yeah, I don't know. That's about it.
What is that, season 3?
Season 3, it is. Yeah.
And is it feeling like this is it? This is all you can deal with?
You know, so far, they haven't told me anything I didn't know.
Right. I think I watched one episode and I was already like, ugh, I'm not ready for this slog.
You know, it's funny you say that. So we finished like the 2nd or 3rd episode. I don't remember which one it was. And I told Clarissa, I said, you know, I might be done with TV. And she says, why would you be done with TV? I said, you know, movies, they tell you what you gotta know. I mean, the longest movie is still only 3 hours. And they tell you what you gotta know as quickly as you need to know it, and they just get through it fast. And I said, but some of these TV shows can go like 5 episodes, and it doesn't even move.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's just like, it's so just drawn out. Just, and we've talked about this in the past.
Yeah.
It's so drawn out just to sell, like, advertising.
Well, now it's not even that. It's just to spend your audience's time. You know what I mean? It literally is just to prolong them watching your streaming service over somebody else's streaming service. You know? So now it's just like...
Well, that's true. Yeah, it's not time because there's no ads.
Keep them paying the subscription for whatever it is, you know? And
right.
And it's like the double-edged sword of something that is successful and something that is good. You know, if a movie is good, then maybe that director and those actors will get more projects, and the more projects can probably be in the similar vein, but it's maybe not exactly the same character, a la The Irishman. You know, it's not a sequel to anything, but we know what we're gonna get.
Yeah.
And we're probably gonna be happy with the outcome. But with a TV show, if it's successful, then it just gets, you know, extended beyond its shelf life. And The Walking Dead has 2 movies. You know, the franchise has been extended, that they greenlit 2 movies to be made from that.
Yeah.
And it might be interesting if they take it in a different direction. Maybe it's a better way to do something. You know, you do 3 seasons and then you do a movie. You know, I think,
you know, you do 17 seasons and then you do 2 movies. Because, like, I mean, you had, like, what, 13 seasons and then into a spinoff season that becomes, like, a linear world that gets like characters transitioning back and forth for like five seasons. I mean, it's like, where does this thing end? I get it. There's zombies in the world, right. You know? Like,
have you ever watched any Supernatural?
No, but I do have that on my queue for Netflix streaming.
It's gone like 20 plus seasons.
Maybe I'll take it off my...
There is some good, there are some solid episodes within, you know, the first 10 seasons. And it's, to me, it's an amazingly.
Is it really that long?
Yeah. It's been around for 20 years, I think 20 seasons.
It's like The Simpsons. It's like 30 years old.
But these are two, you know, demon hunters. It's like, it doesn't make any sense.
Incredible. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, like, it's kind of like, what's the, like those old soap operas, you know, like Days of Our Lives or something.
Oh yeah, soap operas.
Yeah, those kind of shows. I mean, they just, you know, they just go and go and go. They don't go anywhere, and they're just some crazy story, daytime soaps or whatever. Man, these shows are ridiculous.
All right, I was wrong. It's only 14 seasons long.
Oh, that's all.
But it's still going on.
For that, you know, for 14 seasons, I may as well watch it twice.
And it's got the old run of episodes, too. It's got anywhere between 20 and 23 episodes a season.
And what are they, 45 minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, dude. Add up that time. You know, I better start now. I might be dead soon. Holy cow. That's the next 5 years of my life. Watching Supernatural. Yeah. Oh man. Well, hey, what do you say we get going? I got some Supernatural to get caught up on.
There you go. You watch that.
Yeah, I don't think so.
How'd your beer turn out?
Oh no, I'm still sipping on it, man. It's really good, actually. It's a little bit like orange peel, you know, like I said mm-hmm. earlier, you know, fruity. But as it's warming, it's like getting a little bit more complex, a little less like, well, how should I say it? Like a little less direct, you know, like when it's cold, you drink it and you get like one hit of one flavor. But now that it's warming, it's like expanding in its flavor. And I do have, you know, a number of sips left. So we'll see where it goes over the course of it. But how about you? How was yours?
Mine was good. It didn't last as long, so it didn't get a chance to warm up too much.
Was yours a 16 or a 12?
Mine was a little 12.
12, okay.
Standard, but it's 6.4. I think 6.4, 6.5, still a decent hit.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Ted. Hey, man, I think we had another good week of the Trailer Junkies podcast.
Awesome. Thanks, Jimmy.
Yeah. All right, man. Hey, you have a good night, and we'll catch you next week, man. I look forward to another discussion about, like, I don't know, Westerns and whatever Netflix does.
All right. See you. Bye.
All right, later. Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kim Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.